Do you ever have trouble drifting off to sleep, sleeping through the night? You're not alone. Millions of Americans have trouble sleeping. What do you do when you're having trouble sleeping? If you get up and read, you might want to take a look at this book. It's titled Hello Midnight, an Insomniac's Literary Bedside Companion. The book was put together by Deborah Bishop and David Levy. They call it a compendium to distract, amuse, and entertain the dream deprived. Deborah Bishop is my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She writes for a number of publications, including Time Out and the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Deborah, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Do you have trouble sleeping?
Well, I do, and I always have, and that's sort of what led to this book. I think the first time I remembered, my first conscious memory of not being able to sleep was as far back as nursery school, and everyone else was napping, and I was awake. It's kind of gone on from there.
Yeah. What do you do when you can't sleep?
Well, you know, over the years, my approach has changed. I think the older I've gotten, I'm getting a little bit more into submitting to it. Instead of fighting it, there's nothing really worse than laying in bed for 3 hours. It feels like 30 hours, thinking about how bad you're going to look in the morning, what a mess you're going to be, and how you're going to oversleep. At this point, I read, or I kind of sit there and feel how cozy it is, and it's a little bit of a change of mindset. But having said that, it is also easier to do if you are, as I am, a freelancer, as opposed to having to be somewhere at, say, 8 in the morning.
Yeah, you can set your own schedule.
You can. So if you want to work till midnight or 1 in the morning, you have that privilege.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that from time to time, everyone has trouble sleeping.
Well, I think so. I have met very few people that said that they had 365 fabulous nights a year of perfect sleep. And I really think if we look at the world in which we live, there would be something a little odd about never having a bout of insomnia. I mean, our world is fraught with stress and tension, and it moves very quickly, and we have many 24-hour seductions, you know, from the internet to other distractions. So I would find it curious, the person who always went off and had a perfect night's sleep.
Yeah. Then there are those poor folks, like medical residents, who are kept from sleeping. A group of them yesterday asked OSHA to limit their work week, get this, to 80 hours and limit shifts to a maximum of 24 consecutive hours.
Well, they have very good reasons for making those requests. There are few people as overworked as medical interns. It's not only bad for them, though, as experience has shown over and over again. Bad things happen when sleep-deprived people have to make life and death decisions. And whether it's in the hospital room or the Exxon Valdez or Chernobyl, many dire accidents happen in the middle of the night and when people who are sleep-deprived have to make decisions that they may not be able to make because they haven't had enough rest.
Yeah. I think it's Warren Zevon, who you've quoted here in the book, who said, "I'll sleep when I'm dead." And those poor medical residents, I think what they're afraid of is they could wind up doing that kind of sleeping sooner than they'd like.
Indeed.
You know, it's a very serious situation, sleep deprivation.
It is, and sometimes it comes from within, as with chronic insomniacs, and other times it's with the medical residents or shift workers. It's coming from the demands of the job.
Yeah. There's a chapter in the book subtitled Rock Around the Clock at Your Own Peril. Tell us how Lyndon Johnson avoided jet lag.
Yes. Well, Lyndon Johnson was in a fortunate position being president of the United States where he could do what most of us can't. And instead of resetting his clock, as most of us have to do when we travel, he simply demanded that other world leaders adjust to his schedule. So they would have to, he would stay on his own time, and wherever he went, he would just make other people meet with him at whatever time it was for him, which was a way of keeping himself feeling pretty good. I'm not sure what the other people thought about it.
Yeah. That chapter, there's a photograph at the outset of that chapter that's really amusing. It's a group of women who are wearing clocks. Where did you find, and there's lots of amusing pictures throughout the book, where did you find these?
Well, the photographs and many other things, we collaborated with a designer whom we hired in New York City because we felt it was very important. you have a book that's appealing to people. There are already many of them, insomniacs. Do you want to give them a book of all print and say, here? Or do you want to kind of help get their mind off the subject and maybe make them smile a little bit? So one of the important thing for us was to make it a book that was both entertaining and interesting to read and to look at. And so there's a lot of vintage photographs, a lot of photographs taken from old films in here. And so it's a real mixture of different graphic approaches, from photography to illustration to movie stills.
Hmm. One of the biggest sleep killers you mentioned earlier is worrying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chapter in the book, the subtitle is 85 Topics of Regret,
yeah.
Remorse, Resentment, and Recrimination, mm-hmm. the chapter's main title. Why worry today when you can worry tonight? Now, why did you put that chapter in there?
Well, we put that in there both as a kind of sort of amusing stopping point, and because for the insomniac, you know, insomnia has been called a philosopher's disease. It tends to afflict people who find it particularly difficult to shut down the brain and who want to solve all the problems of life, from scheduling conflict at, say, at work, to what happened in the last election in the middle of the night. It's, they can't shut the brains down. And so my co-author is not an insomniac, and I am, and I was trying to explain to him it's the things that can keep you up. It's not even necessarily world hunger and, you know, famine and everything else. It's little things become big things. I think F. Scott Fitzgerald said that at 3 o'clock in the morning, a forgotten package has the same tragic importance as a death sentence. You lose your perspective. And so at any rate, we thought it would be kind of entertaining to list some of the things that we might stay awake, or people we know, or, you know, some of it's a little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But to kind of show people that when you're up at 3 in the morning, you know, it's like the funhouse mirror. These things really aren't so bad.
Yeah. For example, is it time to start dressing my age?
That's a personal one. Yeah.
Why did I agree to natural childbirth? If Allie McBeal can't find a man, how will I? And if I'd invested my latte money in an IRA, how much would I be worth?
So you see, we use all those hours between midnight and 8 in the morning to figure these things out.
Yeah. Well, it's striking here in the book that there are so many talented folks. You mentioned a moment ago, folks who are insomniacs generally have trouble shutting their minds down.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be very creative people. So all the talented folks, past and present, who've had trouble sleeping, maybe you'd give us an idea of some of the people
here. It's really quite striking when we started delving. I mean, you start... Oh, authors like Vladimir Nabokov, Dorothy Parker, who I'm glad she was an insomniac. She wrote some of the most interesting and amusing things about insomnia. Marcel Proust, of course, Frank Zappa, Thelonious Monk, Samuel Beckett, Lead Belly, Kafka, Fran Lebowitz, Borges, Joseph Brodsky, Don Powell, current writers like Anne Lamott. And we go back as far to the 12th century China to Lu Yu, who was a poet who wrote a poem called Insomnia that feels very current.
And Charles Dickens is here as well.
Yes, well, Dickens had an interesting approach. He his solution, long before Feng Shui was all the vogue, Charles Dickens would carry a pocket compass whenever he traveled to make sure that his bed was aligned on a north-south facing axis. It was his belief that magnetic currents coursing between the poles would benefit him the most if they flowed straight through his body. I'm not sure where the scientific support for that comes from, but that was his approach to insomnia and to preventing insomnia. I guess if you believe it, it makes it real.
Yeah.
So,
something he dreamed up, no doubt. You've also included in the book a guide, tongue-in-cheek, to sleeping aids.
Yes.
What's in it?
Well, you know, it kind of crosses the whole gamut of things that people really do use that really are helpful to kind of amusing approaches that probably aren't very effective. So there's everything from, you know, boring books to various herbs and aromatherapy. And, I don't know, Vincent van Gogh used to put camphor in his pillow and mattress to help him sleep. Some people find catnip and chamomile to be helpful. Some people count sheep. We suggest you could also count friends, enemies, past lovers, slights, mortifications, years gone by. Roger Angel, the writer, talks about certain books. George Eliot, Henry James, and Montaigne are Nembutals, slow-acting but sure-fire. Thoreau, a dangerous second-all Demerol bomb is reserved for emergencies. 30 minutes in the Walden beanfield sends me back to bed at a half-run, fighting unconsciousness all the way down the hall. So there are, you know, you could keep a little bookshelf. You could put your Ayn Rand on there and pick it up when you really want to be put to sleep.
Yeah.
Some things are real. Exercising early in the day is helpful. Many people do find that yoga and meditation and other forms that incorporate deep breathing can kind of help slow the body down and calm it down and get it ready for the state of sleep. I suppose I shouldn't say I'm an advocate, but many studies have shown that marijuana can be helpful,
mm-hmm.
depending how much you smoke and when you smoke it. Massage can be helpful.
Turkey sandwich.
There you go.
Tryptophan.
Tryptophan, yeah. Although, you know, that isn't universally endorsed. Tryptophan is an amino acid. It's found in, as you mentioned, turkey. It's found in cheese and milk. And it's used by the body to make serotonin, which is a sleep-inducing chemical in the brain. Some studies have shown that about a gram or two can be an effective treatment. But it was removed from shelves of health food stores, I think, in 1989, when there was a contaminated batch, and it was linked to the deaths of about 38 people, which might keep you up at night. So now it's available by prescription only.
Hmm.
And others find warm milk, and which is naturally rich in tryptophan, helps them.
Yeah. There's a great picture of the Stooges in here.
The Stooges.
They were great sleepers, weren't they?
Well, I guess they were.
They were so in sync with one another. This just occurs to me that they would, you know, they would snore together. It was like a symphony.
Synchronized snoring.
That's right. That's right.
A new Olympic event.
Deborah, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, it really is a pleasure to be here.
Happy dreams.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Deborah Bishop. She and David Levy are the authors of Hello, Midnight, an Insomniac's Literary Bedside Companion.